Your Central Minnesota Farm Report here on Chasm Radio. I am Farm Director Joe Gill. Your report this week brought to you once again by Midsoda Trailer Sales and Service. Located right off I-94 in Avon, talk to Chad and the crew. They can help you out when it comes to trailers. You name the trailer, you don't see the trailer you're looking for, they can do one better and custom build that trailer. That's all at Midsoda Trailer Sales and Service. They wish you and your family a very happy Easter weekend. Well, we talk about Easter, and, well, you got Easter, and, of course, some of the kiddos always wondering what kind of chocolate is in that Easter basket. Fellow farm broadcaster Stephanie Hoff talks about chocolate in Easter and some of her markets. Stephanie, fellow farm broadcaster from Madison, Wisconsin, with the Midwest Farm Report, and she files this special report this week.
We are right in the thick of the spring confectionery season, but if you've noticed your favorite Easter basket treats looking a little different this year or costing a little more, you're not alone. Today, we're looking at the world of cocoa prices and the changing landscape of the candy aisle. Joining us is Billy Roberts. He's the senior analyst of food and beverage with CoBank. From the rise of ingredient alternatives to why we're still willing to pay a premium for high-quality dark chocolate, Billy's breaking down the sweet and sometimes sour outlook of the chocolate industry.
I think we're going to continue to see a lot of those chocolate brands lean toward options that are a little bit less expensive and that they can honestly kind of mitigate those costs a little bit more easily. So venturing away from more volatile ingredients like cocoa, we've seen prices fluctuate dramatically over the past couple of years, and more into options that we've already seen on store shelves with a lot more inclusions. So things like nuts, pecans, walnuts, those kind of things, or even other types of candies. We certainly saw Hershey's last year expand into a gummy variety of product. So I think we're going to see a lot of those chocolate brands kind of extend themselves further out into the snack space, but also into that sweet confectionery space, not exclusively in the chocolate confectionaries, but also into those more sugary, sweet confections like gummies, like jelly beans.
That's simply, too, because they're trying to protect a bottom line right now with the volatility in the cocoa price.
Exactly, yes. And we've seen that cocoa price kind of mitigate in the last month or so. It's kind of settled in a little bit over that $3,000 barrier. The issue is, around mid-year of last year, it was closer to $10,000 per ton. And around in the fall, many of the chocolate manufacturers, they kind of hedged it around the $6,000 or $7,000 mark. And now all of a sudden, the bottom has kind of dropped out of the cocoa market a little bit. It's not completely destroyed, but it's certainly a lot less than that hedge mark was for a lot of those companies. So they're kind of waiting in the wings to see exactly if this price drop is going to be permanent, if this is kind of what our new normal is for cocoa prices, or if there's going to be some more volatility. We honestly aren't probably going to know that for sure until we start to see what that yield is in the cocoa products or cocoa production later in the summer, early fall. We should know that then, but as of last year's crop, yields were actually pretty good. It helped mitigate some of the challenges that they had seen in cocoa-producing regions of the world. Their shortfall was a little bit less than had been expected, so it kind of helped out those prices a little bit on the cocoa end.
What was fascinating to me, Billy, was that even though chocolate manufacturers and retailers have to keep that price higher for consumers, and despite the fact that chocolate companies are coming out with a wider range of products, consumers still want that premium high cocoa.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've certainly seen research where consumers are willing to pay a little bit more for a premium cocoa experience. I think some of that may well be consumers looking for a little bit more out of their chocolate experience than necessarily just that quick grab and grow out of the checkout aisle in the grocery store. I think they're actually looking for something that's a little more beneficial. So we're seeing a lot of interest in higher cocoa content, which is actually probably not helping in terms of the cocoa price, because it's certainly boosting that demand. But we're not seeing that demand let up, really. We're seeing a lot of consumers willing to pay a little bit more for a higher cocoa content, and they actually perceive overall the healthful benefits, if you will, of a higher cocoa content, whether it's flavonoids or in terms of heart health or mood health, for that matter, but also some actual healthful benefits from it as well. that I think consumers are realizing they can kind of have, to a degree, the best of both worlds with their chocolate, especially with a more premium experience. We've seen the numbers kind of indicate that consumers are they're realizing that they're spending more on the chocolates that they would get in the, at the point of purchase at the grocery store. They're willing to spend that much on a higher quality product that actually kind of meets a higher demand factor and can meet some of those healthful requirements and healthful ambitions that they may well have and kind of merge indulgence and health in kind of a perfect union.
So perhaps the Easter Bunny will bring mom and dad some high quality cocoa and the kiddos will get some of that new gummy or nutty treats without the higher chocolate content in their baskets. The bottom line is that whether it's for the antioxidants or just the mood boost, our love affair with chocolate is not going anywhere, even if the price tag puts a bit more pressure on our wallets. A huge thanks to Billy Roberts from CoBank for giving us some time on why our candy aisles are looking a little more gummy or nutty and come at a price premium lately. I'm Stephanie Hoff.
All right, Stephanie, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Our fellow farm broadcasting friend over there in Madison, Wisconsin. We stick with our Easter theme. Rod Bain will wrap up this week's report.
Ready for Easter? Particularly an exciting tradition?
A big tradition. A lot of families decorate Easter eggs and then to do an Easter egg hunt.
And USDA food safety expert Meredith Carruthers does not exaggerate when she says a certain bunny prevalent this time of year is also excited about hiding Easter eggs and treats and such.
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail.
There's that rumor about that rabbit posing as the Easter Bunny over the years. And then, wait, you're not the Easter Bunny, are you?
Could be.
You rascal.
An Easter egg in and of itself. Well, now then, back to you, Meredith. As when it comes to egg prep Easter style, you have some exact food safety tips to share for your consideration.
In general, when you're handling eggs, as you're taking them from the refrigerator to boil them, really important to wash your hands after you've touched those eggs, especially before they're cooked, and even after they're hard boiled, per se.
This will help prevent becoming sick from a foodborne illness, as well as keeping your food safe. The clean part of what Meredith and other food safety experts recommend for food safety: clean, separate, cook, and chill.
If you're going to be eating the eggs that you use for Easter activities, keeping in mind things like the two-hour rule and not eating any eggs that have been outside for an Easter egg hunt are all important.
Some things to think about regarding hard-boiled eggs for consumption.
If you are boiling your eggs, keeping in mind too that hard-boiled eggs can be safely in the refrigerator and consumed for up to 7 days. So not hard-boiling them too early, per se, and boiling them closer to when your festivities are going to happen.
And when dyeing the Easter eggs you plan to eat,
there are some food coloring or egg dyes that aren't safe to eat, per se. So making sure that if you're going to plan to eat them, that you're getting a dye that is actually safe to eat.
After boiling and dyeing eggs, keep in mind the two-hour rule.
Because it's unsafe to let those hard-boiled eggs stay out for more than a two-hour time frame.
Refrigerating Easter eggs before 2 hours to avoid potential foodborne bacteria. Now, what about those hard-boiled eggs meant for Easter egg hunting?
It's not safe to eat those at that point, just because dirt and other bacteria in the environment can contaminate onto the shells and potentially get inside, and those are things that you don't want to consume.
And finally, what about eggs of a different sort, like the ones found perhaps in an Easter basket?
Chocolate is cool to be out at room temp, like a hard bar of chocolate or the hard chocolate eggs and things like that. Those are all usually safe to be at room temperature.
Hippity hoppity happy Easter day.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Alrighty, Rod, always appreciate that. Always do a great job around the holidays. I know before that, Gary Crawford also did a wonderful job as well from USDA. And that wraps up our special, Central Minnesota Farm Report. Can we call it an Easter edition? Thank you to Rod, and also thank you to Stephanie Hoft, our farm broadcasting colleague from Wisconsin. Once again, thanks for tuning in. Have yourself a wonderful day and a very happy Easter.